Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm Kwadwo Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. As the world celebrates the World Tourism Day today, 27 September, Nigerian travel journalist Obinna Emelike of Business Day newspaper and Jeanette Seha, a U.S. travel reporter and anchor of Jet Set with Jeanette, looks at how travel journalists can contribute to making tourism a social force for good. So welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I have Jeanette Seha and Obinna Emelike. Today is the World Tourism Day, 27th of September. It's a day that the World Tourism Organization, a UN agency, you know, specialized for tourism and responsible travel in the world, has put this day aside to recognize, you know, tourism's force as a pillar in our economies, in our social life, etc. And this year, the theme was tourism and rural development. So with me to do the discussion today is Jeanette and Obinna. Obinna, how is the situation from Nigeria, if I may start with you?
We're cool here. The thing is fine here. We are cool over here in Nigeria. And, you know, Nigeria also be celebrating the 60th independence on October 1st. So it's like everything is busy of activities for both the World Tourism Day and our 60th independence anniversary.
Okay, so before we go to the World Tourism Day itself and what it means for you as a reporter, how is Nigeria in terms of the post-COVID or the COVID era in terms of travel and tourism? In fact, first of all, introduce yourself again, what you do, etc.
Okay, well, I am Obinna Emelike. I'm a travel journalist, award-winning travel journalist, CNN award-winner, and I'm assistant editor with Business Day. I did travel and the hospitality section Business Day. And I'm a passionate, not just writer, a passionate traveler too. I do more of African and also maybe across the world, but I am a specialist in African tourism.
Okay, excellent. So tell us, go ahead and give us the scene right now in Nigeria in terms of how things are easing up gradually. We have the borders open, mandatory. Just give us highlight of what the situation is right now in Nigeria.
Okay. Nigeria, fortunately, is the biggest economy in Africa. But, you know, the COVID really hit hard on Nigeria because, you know, we are dependent on oil. With the falling oil prices, you understand, it really affected Nigeria, a whole big deal. Now, the post-COVID isn't going to be easy because everything is dependent on oil picking up. For the fact that the oil is not picking up as expected, it's also affecting the economy. Again, other economies in the world, which Nigeria depend on, they're also down. So it's like we are waiting for everybody to wake up at the same time, but it's not going to be so. People who have a kind of a things to push or push their economies are going to recover faster than others. For instance, in Nigeria now, don't forget that about 3 years ago, Nigeria had this recession. So Nigeria is just trying to recover from that recession. And this thing is still coming up now. So people are working hard to see Nigeria overcome, you understand, impending economic crunch. But for now, what the government has done is to ease the economy first. The social gathering is eased. Economies is open up a little. Hotels is open. Recreation centers, schools, businesses are beginning to open, and we are hoping that recovery will be fast. But already, it is an economy that is struggling the after effect of a recession, you understand? So it's not going to be other easy. We are going to recover, but it's not going to be as fast as we intended.
Of course. I mean, if you look at the global scale, I think that all economies are going to struggle at some point in time. And again, it comes back to the fact that economies that are not giving priority to tourism, it's now for them to rethink. Let me come to Jeanette. You know, Jeanette is a podcaster. She's been a very good friend in the course of some few months. And tell us about yourself. I mean, I was on your podcast now. It's the other way around. So tell me about yourself and what you do and everything.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Coco. And I'm happy to be here live from the United States. As you mentioned, I do have a podcast called Global Conversations. I'm also working on a TV show that's been on a temporary hold due to the pandemic. I'm also a travel journalist and a speaker at conferences. And so, yeah, it's interesting times. I feel that what we're going through in the United States is definitely one of our most difficult times, because we're not only going through the pandemic, but we're dealing with the upcoming presidential election as well. And we're dealing with the other pandemic, which is the racial pandemic that is really prevalent. And so I feel like we're going through really historic times right now. And yeah, it's really interesting, for sure, to say the least.
No, unprecedented, obviously, yeah. But what is the situation right now? Because the last time that we spoke, things were easing up. And then there was like the second wave. And right now, people want to still travel. But a whole lot is happening in the States. And yeah.
It's definitely ever changing, and I honestly take it day by day on a personal and professional level, because things constantly are changing. For example, every state, you know, we have 50 states, every state is kind of going through their own guidelines and their own reopening phases. No state is the same. For example, Hawaii will be reopening to tourists, I believe, in October. They've been delaying it every month. But even as Americans, for us to want to go to Hawaii, for example, we have to do 14-day quarantine ourselves. And I hear that they are very strict out there. So it's really interesting even for us to travel within our own country right now. What a lot of Americans are doing is they're doing road trips, RVs, a lot of local travel, maybe within their own state, national parks. That's still a popular trend. If Americans are going out of the country, another popular destination is Mexico, which is open to Americans. Places like Cabo San Lucas or Cancun, Tulum, even Mexico City. So definitely still travel going on, not as international, you know, right now, as we're still limited to where we can go. So like I said, it's interesting times for sure.
Oh, of course. Now, as a travel reporter, what's your storyline in all this pandemic, and what is the new focus? If you're writing a story, if you're filming a destination, what will be the focus?
Well, I do a lot of the tourism, but I also do a lot on diversity, which is also very important to me. Right now in the U.S., we're still celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, which the Hispanics and Latinos in the U.S. make up about 18.5% of our population. And they can about 60.6 million people in the U.S. alone. So really highlighting in the travel industry how we contribute, how we like to travel, and, you know, just more representation is something that I'm covering a lot right now. Also, pandemic era travel and what the future will look like in a post-pandemic world.
Okay. Obina, so let me come to you, and how tourism in Africa in terms of the rural areas. Now, today is a World Tourism Day, and if you look at the theme, it's tourism and rural development. How is Nigeria celebrating the World Tourism Day? What has been the role between, because we know day in, day out, there's a lot of rural-urban migration, and it's affecting the local community. What is Nigeria doing in terms of tourism and its impact on the rural communities?
Okay, well, you know, the issue with Nigeria is that, sadly, because I'm one tourism writer that is objective in my write-up, Nigeria has missed several opportunities, and opportunities are developing rural areas where about 80% of the tourism sources are. Nigerians don't go there. You know, when we had an economic recession, we are thinking that the recovery should have tourism, which is the lowest hanging fruit for economic diversification, because we've been dependent on oil for a long time. Now, in the rural areas, almost all the tourism attractions we have are in the rural areas. The first World Heritage Site in Nigeria is in the rural area. The second is also in the rural area. You understand? So the Sokoto, which is the first, Sokoto Kingdom, which is the first in Adamawa State, and the Osun Oshogbo, which is in Osun State, the two World Heritage Sites, are not visited. They are in rural areas. The community there are even crying out because there's no electricity. There's nothing to even attract people there. So government has so neglected some of all those areas. Now, people are forced to leave those areas. And those who are leaving are people with skills. Imagine a weaver. Imagine someone who is into craft. Imagine someone who is into traditional music, leaving because there's no patronage. You understand? So at the end of the day, it's affecting the economy of those rural areas because everybody's heading to the town because it's happening in the townships. You understand? So Nigeria is that place where people, when you finish your education, people are leaving wherever they are in the rural to the city because the jobs are in the city. Now people are throwing away skills. They are going for certificates, which is a bad one for us. Tourism is not about certificate. Tourism is about what we can offer. So in Nigeria today, it's sad that the things we offer in the rural area, you understand, are somehow diminishing bit by bit, day by day, because those who are supposed to do it are leaving. For instance, the guys who are weavers in Oshogbo, where we have the second World Heritage Site, some of them are leaving to the town. Now, their parents or their forefathers, their parents cannot hand over to some of them because they are not there. So what it means, that craft will die with them, which is unfortunate. Now, if you go to Kano, the Kano Dye Pit, which is famous, gradually, the Kano Dye Pit is almost gone because the people who used to do it have either gone into politics or have either gone to do other things.
You know, let me come to you. I think that, I mean, in the new order where we have, taking advantage of the digital space, obviously we're having challenges trying to connect with Obina. Jeanette, my point was that if you also look at your travels across the world, what is it that we can do to create opportunities for rural communities in terms of tourism? Because if we are shifting to a point of urban tourism, then we leave the rural destinations sometimes in tatters. What has been your experience? Do you think we can do to rectify that?
It's a great question and a great focus point for some underrepresented, rural communities. For example, last year I went to Guatemala and I went to Lake Atitlan, which is a village surrounded by the lake. However, I explored the little villages surrounding and I met women, textile makers, who it's for hundreds of years have been following the tradition of making textiles, fabrics, scarves, blankets, clothing for visitors and for their community. But that goes back to the local village and that helps support their local economy. And so these are some of the people and the stories that I think about is if there are no tourists, who is going to buy their products? It's so rural. They don't have the computer. They don't have social media. They are, just working from their village, from their home, making the traditional textiles and selling it to tourists. But if there's no tourists, how are they going to continue to support themselves and their local village, for example? There is no e-commerce, there is no internet, there is no social media, for example. So those are kind of the stories that I think about.
But also, do you think about the point that we are getting to a situation whereby travelers, as part of also, like we said, travel, enjoy, and respect, can look at observing some of the things in these areas, because again, tourism and rural development can also be a source of preserving heritage and culture, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the beautiful thing. I think that's why tourists like to go to these kinds of destinations like at Lake Atitlan in Guatemala, because they meet you know, the locals continuing this tradition that you can't get in a metropolitan city, for example. You get it firsthand when you visit. So this is what I like to see when I personally travel. This is one of the highlights of my trip. And these are firsthand. These stories, it go all over the world, right? But they're also one of the hardest hit, you know, financially because of this lack.
I mean, they were less prepared. I mean, if you think about the fact that the cities and urban cities are struggling, then you can, by extension, look at for them and with all the challenges that they have. What I was saying was that you go to places and people sometimes get to destinations, they're overly excited. And the point is that they lose those things that they ought to know, the basic things. Remember that as a travel, tourism is a force for social good. So you cannot go to a destination and, if you like, defy the culture or do something that is contrary to it. So I believe that there should be storylines that journalists would have to look at in terms of writing and what people should know. It's not only about the pictures, Instagram, and etc., but understanding that. If you interact with travelers, do you get a sense of that in the new kind of normal that we are heading towards?
Oh, yes. And I hope that that is more the future of the new normal. I mean, I think what we all want is substance, meat to the bones. You know, I think, like myself, a lot of people are tired of the top 10 list, all these lists, exactly. You know, which at the end of the day are personal opinions. I mean, I may not agree with any of the lists that somebody may like. Every traveler is different. Just like me and you can go watch a movie. You may love it. I may not like it. I may like it. You may not like it. It's the same with travel. We can go to the exact same destination and have a completely different outlook, experience, etc. So I think travelers as well want more substance, want more authenticity, want more what, you know, about what you're saying, the locals, the culture, the more about the history, not so much maybe about the messenger, about the writer, about, you know, things that, you know, it's just more self-serving. It's more about who the people are and what
like
is
right.
Yeah,
I like
and
your
I point. I hope we're moving into that more, not so much influencer-ish world where it's all more self-serving, but we're going into the meat of, you know, why these destinations are so important and the history. And that's what I personally love to do when I go to a destination. I like to go for a walk and meet the locals and ask them questions and learn from them. Cuba was an amazing experience for me, for example. When I went to Cuba, I met some of the most amazing locals, and I got a really interesting perspective of their life in Cuba. And it was my first communist country that I visited. So it was really fascinating to understand a whole nother world, right? And to share their stories, their struggles, their achievements, their voices was more important for me than to talk about me. So I hope that's where we're going, because, you know, we have so much bigger issues at hand than, you know, things that are just self-serving. So.
No, I know that. Obina, are you back? Hope you're back now. Can you hear us? I mean, definitely we're just having problems connecting with, you know, with Obina in Nigeria. But yeah, no, I think that's a point, because often than not, people also, and as travelers, we owe it a responsibility, you know, is our responsibility to understand what it is that where we are going, to read about the destination, because it is part of the process of giving back to that community and understanding who they are and all of that. And we've seen sometime the level of aggression from the destination. So that's the thing. The other thing is, do you think that we are getting to an era where health, safety, and security will be part of a story that we like to tell as a reporter, that before you write a destination, you have to look whether they are adhering to that or not? And are we going to look out for that?
Well, I think as a journalist, I think that you have to first state the facts, right? What are the facts? What is the current situation? But, you know, the current pandemic, it's the big elephant in the room. There's no way to get around it because we are still very much in it. So I feel what would be responsible would be to you know, inform what is the current status of that destination that you are covering. I think that's important to let the readers or the audience understand the current situation, and then they can decide if they want to go visit themselves. That would be ultimately up to them. But I think as a journalist, it's your job to report the story, report the facts, and to share the stories. That is, you know, that is what we do for work, and it's important, right? It's important for us to continue this work because, you know, journalism, especially in the US, is part of our democracy. This is what we need to understand what's happening in the world. This is what we need. And it's very different coming from people who have reputable sources and reputable publications, right? As opposed to just, you know, it's important to know who is your source and who is your, who are you reading? Who are you watching, right?
So that's true. Let me try for the third time again with Obina. Okay. Let me see.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So we you know, we're about wrapping up, and my question to you before we lost you was the fact that do you think that in Africa we need to also, you know, cultivate the you know, the habit of education with our rural folks and letting them understand, even at some point in time, upscaling their you know, their businesses to, for them to know how they can go e-commerce and how they can leverage on the digital tools as we celebrate, you know, tourism and rural development.
I think it's very necessary. My last trip, that was in February, that was Uganda. At the Muyoyo, at the, what do you call it, the shrine where the, what do you call it, the shrine in Uganda. We met one of the guys there. I think what he was telling me was, the management of the place has made it a kind of a point of duty to train and upscale the skills of some of the tour guides and operators around there, because they discovered that a number of people or tourists who are coming in now are classic. You understand? So they also need to meet up with the kind of people who are coming in. You don't just remain where you are and expect to also be getting, you know, part of a product upgrade is also upgrading the skills of people who deliver this product to the people, to the visitors. For instance, if I'm coming to Ghana, I go to a beach to swim, and that beach is by, you know, courtesy of a hotel. I'm expected to know everything. But if I'm going to a village, and that village has a waterfall, and I'm supposed to take my bath or swim in the waterfall, and it's expected that someone from that village will tell me, this is how we do it here. So we need to really upscale their skills for them to be able to, like, really engage the visitors in the right way. Because the thing is, like, a visitor might come, he may not get the whole experience if he's not tutored, but if he's not taken to the real experience. And the person who is supposed to take it is the person, the villager, is the rural person. But you need to really upscale his skills for him to be able to do it. Thank God for places like Kenya, where we have like Dali College, where they are now upscaling the skills of hospitality guys. So I think it's the duty of the tourism board, the duty of destinations, the duty of destination managers, and the duty of rural community businesses to upscale the skills of the guys who work with them, to be able to give the tourists really what they want. It's important for them to have a wholesome experience.
Okay. Now, in wrapping up, what would be your tourism story? What angles will your tourism stories take in, you know, in the wake of the post-pandemic and tourism and rural development? What will be your angle going to the new, you know, the new world, or if you like,
post-COVID?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I think now it's going. I've been pushing it. I think now it's going domestic. Kenya has shown us that it can be done. Kenya has 70% of Kenya tourism, a kind of a patronage, is domestic, while 30 is foreign. So now, what it means is, if the foreign foreigners are not coming, Kenya will still thrive post-COVID. Now in Nigeria, most hotels in Nigeria are empty. They are depending on flights to come in. Until 29th of August, when they open international airspace, the hotels were empty. So what it means is that you need international inflow, like 60% of their kind of patronage is from international.
So, but if we can sustain within, if we can do domestic, if we can make our domestic tourism work, what did you do for Africa post-COVID is that we will sustain the industry. The recovery of the industry will be faster than expected. So all we need to do is push the domestic. If we push the domestic front, it will enable us to come up. If things are not coming the way we want it, let's start patronizing even that kiosk you see there. The hill you see there, the zoo there. Let's go there. Let's go and see what they are doing. Let's not allow the animals to die because foreigners are not coming. You understand? Let's do it. It's our own. Okay. Let's do it within ourselves.
Of course, Obinna. Thanks so much. Let me wrap up with Jeanette. So a year from now, in having another World Tourism Day, what will be your wish for the tourism industry, Jeanette?
My wish for the following year on World Tourism Day is that, you know, borders and nations have safely reopened. There is a vaccine already in place, and that the tourism industry and travel professionals and journalists are working together to have a more safe, sustainable way to travel, that local economies are thriving again, whether that's through local travel, domestic travel, and or international travel. I feel like this year, 2020, was a great wake-up call for us all, maybe to emerge and grow together for better, safer travels in the future. And I feel that I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful. I feel that we will get through 2020 together. I feel 2021 will be a better year for recovery, restarting everything tourism. And
where are you going next? Where will be your first destination in the post in the pandemic era?
That's such a good question. I get that asked almost every day. I would say you put me on the spot. I would say Africa.
Ah, super. I got you now. Obinna, what will be your first destination post the pandemic, or your next travel?
Well, I would have gone to Europe, but the problem is that Europe is
closing up to Africans.
It's like that now. We have a second wave in Europe, so I'm a kind of my heart is with them, but for now I'll travel with him. I'd like to hit Ghana. Let me come to Accra. I'm missing Accra. I've not been there for a while now. I like to come to Accra. Then when I come, I'll do my thing.
Okay, all right. No, thank you guys. Jeanette Seha, Obinna Emelike. I think it's been good having this conversation on World Tourism
Thanks
Day.
Enough, yeah.
And I hope you guys are having a good time on Sunday. And to have a World Tourism Day on Sunday means a lot.
Yeah.
And we had attention. So have a great and wonderful day, and hope to have you back again on the Tourism Podcast.
Anytime.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
I appreciate it. Yeah.